So again, my name's Scott and I'm an addict. And this is a real treat. You know, I was introduced to Dylan 2 years ago? 2 years ago in a medium that I used to really put my nose at, this Zoom thing and this family sponsorship, but I was required to attend this thing. And there was one thing that kept happening. This one guy, Dylan, was always the first one logging in the morning. He was chalking it up, having a good time, having these experiences, talking about things. And then come to find out, Dylan and I are sponsored by the same gentleman, Tarek. Dylan and I began to show up to these events, and Dylan was always there. And I wasn't so sure, like, what Dylan and I were going to talk about, right? What was our common thread or our bond? But there was one thing that I kept saying, right? This is a guy that was, it was clear to me that he had used, he had drank, he had thought, he had experienced life. Maybe the nuances were different, but in that hopeless way that I got to as well. He had gotten to that stepping off place, and something about his reaction to life was different. Not only that, Dylan is a guy that is absolutely embraces this idea of being inconvenienced and making himself a service to others. It's Wednesday night. We're at 6:30. Dylan's from Birmingham. So when I meet with these guys and they say, man, I got this busy schedule, I got this, I got that, I gravitate towards this. Dylan has a solution that is proven in his life, and it has been an absolute honor and a pleasure over the past 2 years to spend time with this gentleman. And when it came time to bring in a speaker in for the first Boomerang speaker, I couldn't think of a better guy. So, Dylan, we appreciate you being here. Can't wait to hear what you got, buddy.
Y'all hold on while I strip. My name's Dylan Isaacs. I'm a drug addict. Power of God showed up in my life February the 7th of 2021, and for that I will be forever grateful. My home group is the Wall Big Book Group of Cocaine Anonymous. Meets Tuesday nights at 7 o'clock at Birmingham Recovery Center. We would love to have y'all. I have a sponsor who knows he's my sponsor, and I currently sponsor 5 men. I also hold a position in my group and at the area level. And all of that is important for reasons I did not understand when I had 2 weeks, you know? Because I have to be willing to give back to the thing that saved my life. You know, I did a lot of reflecting. I'm glad y'all set the bar low with me being your first speaker, so expectations won't be too high for the next guy. But I'm only halfway joking. I grew up, man, so I got 9 sisters, right? And I see some ladies in the crowd, and shouts out to y'all, but y'all made me insane at a young age, you know. And so my dad was a car salesman and my mom was a cop, God rest her soul, you know. And I'm gonna try not to cuss, which means I'm probably gonna cuss, but my dad was a car salesman, my mom was a cop, right? So, and I got sisters that are older than me, and I got little sisters, you know. And I'm kind of in the middle. I'm the only boy, and I'm weird. Right? I was a fat, chubby kid. And probably from the time I could talk, I knew how to lie. And I've always been trapped in this like mind-sized prison of what I think you think about me, and please like me, even though I don't really like you or need to like you. I just need to think that you like me, right? And because that's where I get all my value and self-worth, you know. And so my parents split. I was very young. I remember 2-3 years old, my dad, my mom had heart surgery, and my dad, in his infinite wisdom, moved across the parking lot with his new wife, you know. And yeah, it's just how I grew up, man. I thought this stuff was normal. I really did. First step mom, a lot of structure, a lot of discipline. Everything's cool. You know, I'm a kind of fat, chubby kid, grew up in upper poverty, lower middle class. It just depends on the car market. My dad sold a lot of things. And not all of them legal, you know. But he did what he had to do to survive and make way for his family. My second stepmom was an alcoholic, and I was about 8 or 9, and that was my first introduction to a mind-altering substance, Franzia box wine in the space bag. Do not recommend. It was gross. Nothing magical happened. I stole some Virginia Slims and threw up, you know. My third stepmom We got from a treatment center. My sister above me is one of us, and she's still out there. And we went to go see her at a halfway house, and I come back, and this new chick sitting on my couch that was at the halfway house with my sister. And, you know, she's like, I'm your new stepmom. And I'm like, roll tide, baby. You know, you know, I get off the bus, and there's a new lady at my house. And that's just kind of how it was, man. I grew up, and I didn't know this was not normal. Right, I still don't know what normal is, but a somewhat functioning family I didn't have experience with. And the reason I touch on that, so hindsight's always 20/20, you know. And when I look back, each one of those women told me the same thing. My sister was in and out of prison, and she struggles with the same illness that I struggle with, right? And I don't understand addiction or comprehend, like, the loss of power or choice at a young age. All I know is you tell me you're always going to be here, and you inevitably leave. Right, so I think I need to be important for you not to leave. So I figured out bad behavior is just as good as good behavior because you're still paying attention to me. Long as I'm the focus of discussion, I don't care what it's about. You know, Dylan set the kitchen on fire or Dylan got all A's, whatever we got to work with. And because I was a smart kid, you know, until I wasn't. So when I was 10, I got introduced to cocaine, Xanaxes, and ecstasy, and here we go. You know, because as a kid, I got picked on, right? I grew up when wrestling, like, really hit the scene, right? And I wanted to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'd choke Coca-Colas and whatever. And because I always wanted to be somebody I wasn't. And then I get introduced to this thing because I was shy. I was very awkward, right? And I remember it was like I turned into God's little brother. Like, I had all this power. Because, see, on the big book, I think on page 27, it talks about the essence of a spiritual experience, right, is attitudes, ideas, and belief systems that once used to guide me are suddenly cast to one side. See, for about 20 years, cocaine and every other mind-altering substance I could find did that for me, until it didn't. If consequences would have kept me sober, you'd have a different speaker. I started going to jail. How many of y'all got kids? Show of hands. Okay. I was a kid you told yours to stay away from. I'd tell my kid to stay away from me, you know, because I was lawless. My dad worked 18 hours a day. I've been driving since I was 9. Nobody in my family, on my dad's side of the family, had a license nor a vehicle registered to him, though we had a yard full of cars, you know. Very just kind of run of the muck outlaw Alabama stuff, you know. And I got arrested when I was 11. I got kicked out of 15 different schools, you know, yada, yada, yada. Never really tried to stop. When I was 14, I was going back and forth to Atlanta, picking up ecstasy, and my best friend ripped this dude off. Dude shot him wearing a 300 ZX. Dude shot him 5 times in the head right beside me. And I drove from Jonesboro to Heflin, Alabama, with the aftermath of that on the side of me. And that's rough. That's where it really got dark. You know, because, like, at first it was all party, party, party. This is fun, right? And then it's like, I need this to shut my brain off, right? Because I'm sure there's quite a few of us in this room that when I lay down at night, the only thing this thing does is get louder, you know? And I need something to quiet that voice, and I couldn't find it, so it took more Xanaxes. But, you know, I didn't want to be too blacked out, so I'll go get an 8-ball of Coke, and we did that for a long time. And 3 months later, my other buddy slit his throat, bled out my hands. 4 or 5 months after that, my other buddy blew his head off with a shotgun. All this happens before I turned 15 years old. Okay, and I grew up, my sister was a lady of the night, as my mother refers to them, you know, lot lizard, whatever you want to call it. And so I saw a lot of stuff. I used to have to go in trap houses and bandos and go get her, right, because she'd steal my dad's cars. It's just the way I grew up. And none of that shit makes me a drug addict. I used to think it did. You know, it really doesn't. It's just unfortunate external circumstances. But I didn't understand what addiction was at a young age, right? I thought it was, I got a DUI or I can't piss clean. Well, you know, I can't piss clean is a part of it, but I didn't understand why I couldn't piss clean. I was 15. I did a year and a day in a juvenile penitentiary in the state of Alabama for some not so fun stuff. And I get out and I find out I got this little girl. I had a real good dad. You know, sometimes when I tell my story, he's not portrayed in the best light, but that man loved me, and that's all I can really ask for. And I've always wanted to be a good dad, right? So I get out, my first real shot at trying to keep myself sober. God, that sucked. You know, because I've been in and out. Listen, I've been to juvenile treatment programs, and they got books like Hooked on Chronic, you know, and all this dub stuff. Because I grew up under the idea and the belief system that if you remove the drugs, I get better. But I don't. Even at a young age, I get worse. This thing inside my chest and my head won't stop spinning. I can't understand why I don't get better. The drugs are gone. What's wrong? But I got no frame of reference. Because, see, the first introduction I had into recovery, 10 years old, that third stepmom, we go to the oldest CA meeting in Alabama. She get her paper signed. Then we go to the bar. So I got an idea about you people. You're all full of crap, too. You know? I got nobody in my life that doesn't use an anesthetic. Everybody thinks if you just take it away, you'll be okay. I get worse. I tell you 30 days, I'm not entirely certain how long it was. What I know is it felt like 30 years. And then my daughter was teething. My dad's like, hey, put a little whiskey in her baby bottle. I was like, all right. So like a good drug addict, I went and got a gallon of George Dickel. Nothing but the finest, you know. Nothing but that. I think it was $7 for a gallon or whatever it was. I put a thimble in her baby bottle. I drank the rest of the next 2 years as a blur. You know? I can tell you all this external stuff, but what I can tell you is the internal consequences got worse. And it started taking more and more. And I grew up during the prescription pain pill epidemic when Oxycontin ruled the roost, right? And all my friends started shooting dope. And I got introduced to IV drug use at a young age. But by the grace of God, I never shot dope until I did, you know? Because I knew back then that it would kill me. And I had enough grace in my life to go, you know, I thought I was better than them. I just smoked crack, you know? I'm not no drug. I just smoke a little crack, buddy. You know, like 14-year-olds don't smoke crack, you know? But I did, right? And because I always needed to divide myself, right? Because there's this book, if you've never read Chuck Chamberlain, New Pair of Glasses, I highly recommend. And he says that the only thing separating me from God is my conscious mind. And when I was out there, I used my mind to block me off from everybody. I'm different from you, right? I played, you know, star role in the victim movie, you know, because I got all this external shit that would make you feel bad for me. But it doesn't make sense. The decisions I keep being led to make, given my experience, but I can't stop. 17, I get a DUI. So how many of y'all like to be told what you won't do? Anybody? Okay. Me neither. So, you know, don't tell me what I won't do because I'll show you. You know, and I got this DUI, so they tell me you're either going to go to jail for however long. And jail don't really scare me, you know. But I just didn't want to go. It's inconvenient. Summertime, you know. I'm young. There are girls are at the river, you know. Can't wait, just wait till winter. And or you can go to the Army. I'm like, all right, I'll go to the Army, you know. And I'm just going BS you through this process, and then I'm going to go back to doing what I do. And my mom and them, they're like, you ain't going to do it. And I was like, okay. Because, see, I have willpower in certain situations, except when it comes to drugs and alcohol. I have no willpower there. That's another baffling feature about this thing that I suffer from, is I don't understand why I can, like, pull myself up from my bootstraps, lose everything, get it back 15 times. But I can't quit doing drugs. It doesn't make sense. You know, I think something's wrong. It's the girl, because I moved from... There's this place called Bessemer, and then there's a place right beside it called Lipscomb, right? So I'd move from Bessemer to Lipscomb, Lipscomb to McCall. These are all a 3-minute drive from each other, you know? So I go to the Army, and I do good. And I say that, and I was reflecting on this on the drive over. Me and Anthony were talking. Dude, so you got to pass a drug test to get in the Army. I don't know if y'all are aware, but government's real stuck up about it. I don't understand, but... I had to switch. So I went in January the 1st, and like December the 27th, I got to stop. That was hard. And I'm 17 years old, and it's hard, right? I'm just chugging 151. It's the only thing I can get to shut my mind down. And I go to the Army, and I do good because if you tell me what to do and how I'm supposed to do it, I'm all right, right? If you just give me an outline, do not let me freestyle. I'm not Eminem because I will blow this thing up. You know, we're somewhere down in the Gulf Coast in a stolen 18-wheeler with a midget wondering how did we get here. True story. That started from, I've been sober 2 weeks. I can drink one Bud Ice and eat one Xanax. And I'm in a Tyson chicken truck with a little person. But it's a shame. But yeah. And I had a lot of first, right? So, like, my dad told me, whatever you do, don't come back to Alabama. All right, that's cool. That's all well and good, you know. And I come back, right? After I went to Afghanistan, I got blown up. I got all fucked up. I've been shot, blown up twice. Whoop-de-whoop, you know. I come back. There's this girl. There's always this girl, you know. And long story short, we go on a crime spree. I end up with 368 felonies. About 190 of those were Class A's, 18, 19 years old. Okay. It started off for me life without. I used to have hair like the illustrious Anthony here, and you can see what I'm working with now. And they offered me life without. I end up getting a life sentence, 19 years old. Before I got that life sentence, they had me in a work release program trying to send me to treatment. But here's the thing. See, I got all this whole body of evidence. Hey, man, you got every reason to get sober. Can't. And I don't understand why I can't. I got these AA people coming in, but they're coming in with this, just don't drink today. I don't know how not to. I don't know how not to get high. That's not in my vocabulary. I get high no matter what. So this idea of just don't. How? Nobody told me how, right? So they send me to this work release place, and I run. And anyway, my dad comes and gets me. I'm supposed to detox and turn myself in. Long story short, I end up stealing his car. He died that night. Heart attack. You want to talk about guilt and shame, folks? I thought I killed my dad for the better part of 10 years. And I really felt that way. Hopefully I'll come back to that. So I'm 19, maximum penitentiary in the state of Alabama. Do not recommend. I spent 4 years, 8 months in lockup. During that time, the grace of God showed up in my life. Because here's the thing. I didn't grow up around church, around Buddhists, none of that, right? And I used to be the guy that would, like, argue with you about why you were wrong about there being God, you know? And but the grace of God has been working my life my whole life. And so I get my sentence reduced. I get out. All those yets start to happen. The day I get out of prison, the week after, I find out I was adopted. So my real mother left me in a crack house when I was like 8 months old, you know? And that just fueled into this lie I would spin and tell everybody. I'm the victim. You know, everybody's lying to me. Whoop-de-whoop-de-whoop. All these yets start happening. I hadn't been truly homeless yet. I hadn't been truly hopeless yet. Because, see, I walked out of my daughter's life at 6 months old because I felt like I never had the capability to give her a life worth living. And I judged my real mom for that for about 10 years, you know, and I'll get to that at the end. 2014 rolls around, and my life's not bad, you know. My little sister had had a baby, and she was working at a gentleman's club, and so I'm living off her and selling dope on the side, and to everybody else, my life looks normal, you know, because I'm lying. I go to prison again for felon in possession of a firearm, and it got dark. Got real dark. Meth and Xanaxes and Liquid G had really become my master at this point. Because I like to be up, but I want to black out. You know, I'm weird. And I remember I'd be snorting meth and reading the Quran and the Bible and all these books about Kabbalah. Because I think subconsciously I knew I needed something bigger than myself. I just didn't know how to approach it, right? Because I had a real bad taste about what other people told me God was. Not a big fan. You know, and then I smoked some DMT in lockup, and I figured that there was a God, and that was cool. whatever it takes, you know. I get out of prison yet again. Salvation Army, everybody's kind of gave up. I got about a half a bridge left standing, and it's soon to be in fuego. And so there's that same girl from the first time. She's like, you're not really homeless. And I'm like, okay, I'll go stay with her. So there's this little bitty place about the size of this room called Green Pond, Alabama. Don't go. It's right outside of Tuscaloosa. Yeah, yeah. It's where we rescued Anthony from. And Should have seen his ribs were showing when he got here. Dude, I went there, and because, you know, I got this real Alabama family tree. So this girl, anyway, my baby mom and this girl had become best friends, but I dated both of them anyway. And this girl, she's got German cockroaches all through the house. They're all strung out on meth. But I'm lying. I'm living the double life. I'm telling her she needs to get sober, right? As soon as she goes off and runs off with Billy Bob or whoever the hell, I'm pushing her pipe so I can take care of these kids. You know, true double life. I end up walking from there to Southside, which is about here to Atlanta, roughly, you know, in the middle of August to go to a treatment center, still looking for differences. Because, see, I didn't believe that this book would save my life. I really didn't. I was not thoroughly convinced that my life run on my own power could not be a success. I did not understand it. 2020 rolls around, same song and dance. You know, I'm falling in love with girls that live out of hotels. You can fill in the rest. Right, and it's just not working. And so I try to stop, right? And, like, I've never had a problem stopping. Here's the thing. I can't stop from starting again because I can detox with the best of them. I go hit me a lick, I go to the Motel 6, put the air on 66, and sit in the bed for 5 days and be miserable. As soon as the physical goes away, brain's right back to it. And I don't know how. I used to think I just changed my mind. I didn't understand anything about being driven, right? Like I had no choice in the matter. 2020, I get directed to my first true program of recovery and introduced my first sponsor. And that didn't work real well because the obsession came back on me fast, you know? And I wasn't really trying. I was trying to fake it till I made it. I don't know if they say that over here, but I pray to God they don't because they used to say it a lot in Birmingham. It's dangerous advice. I've been faking it my whole life, you know? And I remember I told that dude, I was like, I don't know if I'm really powerless. You know, it's just the Xanaxes. And that man taught me a lot. I ended up relapsing, you know, blah, 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 detox, almost died, whatever. You know, no big deal. Right before I relapsed, my daughter, I'd saved everything I had, right, because I love my kid. But I've never been a father. To this point, to 2020, I've never been a father, right? I'm a cool uncle, comes by, I got $400 in my pocket, I give you 20, I dip, you know? That's what I was doing. I was not showing up real great. But I would tell you I was the best dad on earth because I wanted it to be, but the power was not there. So anyway, my baby mama's out there. She lives in a trailer park, okay? I'm trying to paint the scene for you. It's real illustrious. She's twacked out of her mind on meth. Her new boyfriend's a guy that I went to lock up for stabbing in prison who also has on my clothes, you know. And it's touch and go at best. It's touch and go, you know. And my daughter, I handed her this little iPhone SE. It's $200. And the last $200 I had, she hocked a loogie and spit on my shoe and told me, excuse my language, but fuck you, just because you're out of prison don't make you a father. You know the thing about the truth is it really does hurt. And I'm so glad God doesn't make hopelessness, I'm glad he doesn't make it hopelessness comfortable. You know, because that was my first real experience with it. Now I go to detox and my bright idea, because I almost died on Xanaxes and heroin. So I was like, I'll do meth and liquid G and be successful. And that lasted for a week and I shot dope then. It was miserable. It was miserable. We all know how to get high. Right, but what I can tell you, February the 3rd, I was walking and there's this weird, not quite snow, but it's like sleet. And I got nowhere to go and no more lies to tell. Not to you, but to myself. I know this is not going to be okay. You know? I know. And I don't know what to do. Because see, my family don't want me around. My friends damn sure don't want me around. Right, the only people I knew that would even answer my phone calls are people I met in these rooms. And they're not really, it sounds like they want me around too much, but they're at least they'll answer. But I wasn't following any directions. And so I'm on the phone, call my first sponsor. He tells me I'm screwed, you know, and not so pleasant language. And I call this guy to get an assessment, get in this treatment center. And at the time I had on, I weighed 126 to 7 pounds. I weighed 190 now to put that into frame for you. I had a meth pipe that was full and a bottle of liquid G that was full. So, you know, life's not that bad, but I'd sworn off. sworn off. I got 27 minutes of sleep and I'm done, you know. I'm on the phone with this man I'll never forget. Never forget. A guy named Josh. And I'm doing the assessment. And there's this table over in the corner, and that's where I put my pipe. I was done, you know. I'm on the phone with him, and the next thing I know, I look up, and the torch is going, the pipe's in my mouth, and I start crying because I cannot figure out for the life of me what is wrong with me. I don't want to do this anymore. I can't stop. I walk from there to an AA meeting. I ain't blinked in 5 days, you know. And I pick up a silver chip, and my previous sponsor and the director of Sober Living that I went to stood outside in this rain, and I'm on this rant about how I can keep myself sober. And they broke down page 24 in a way that I never heard it said before. You know, it does not matter what I want to do, I will get high again. And it's not the first time anybody said it to me, surely. It's the first time that it hit me right here. I was like, okay, you know. And so I take this course of action, you know, to get into this treatment center. I'm a shit show, dude. I'm a shit show. And I had a spiritual experience. See, God separated me from liquid G. That was my last hurdle. I had to wean myself off. And the power of God not only showed up right then, he also allowed Tom Brady to win his 7th Super Bowl the same day, you know. And that was pretty cool, right? That was like, this sounds wild. I got all my stuff. It was scattered all over Birmingham in trap houses. Nothing disturbed. Every piece of paper I needed to get into treatment. Every article of clothing, right? I get all that back and my taxes filed. Now, I'm a homeless drug addict, okay? And I got a place to stay for the night. And the night ends with Tom Brady winning the Super Bowl, convincingly. Made me believe in the power of God. Whatever it takes, you know? That was my flimsy read. It really was. And it sounds so crazy to say now. I go to this treatment center, and I follow a suggestion. If you don't listen to speaker tapes, I don't know what you're doing with your life. I really don't. Because they changed the game for me. And there's this one guy out of Texas. He's very fire and brimstone. And he was a big influence on me. And because I never heard anybody talk about working the steps quickly, you know, to have an experience. I heard get comfortable, you know, before you work the steps. Well, the only way I know how to get comfortable is a litany of mind-altering substances and loose women. You know, that's it. That's the only way I know how to get comfortable. And this guy talked. So I found a sponsor who did that with me, right? And I had an experience within 60 days, right? I do my first fist step. And, you know, but for the grace of God, I stand here before y'all. Because I wasn't completely honest. Yeah. When I look back at the body of recovery that I had early on, I don't know how I'm still sober. I really don't. I still lied, right? But something about me had committed to this way of life. I was real rough around the edges. And thank God for that man. His name is Mark R., and I love him to death. And so I finally get free with him, right? And then fast forward, I start making some amends, and things are going okay. And I'd move out of this sober living. I moved in with this dude because I need to save money, and because I'm 30 years old, I need a house, whatever. And, you know, I was just homeless 3 months ago, you know. It's amazing how the ego rebuilds. You know, it really is. It's wild, dude. And so I'd come to this point where I became a doctor, and the steps are a cure-all, so I come off all these psych meds that the treatment center had me on, and you know, I'm a little screwy, and so I go to this place called Lake Gunnersville, Alabama, to do a fishing tournament. We do the scales. And my first sponsor, he's from Blairsville, and his wife's got HIV, and his sister died from cancer. And I made the point-blank declaration, if I ever find out I got cancer or AIDS, I'll blow my damn head off. I said this Saturday. I walk into that house, dude kicks me out. Rightly so. I hadn't been paying them rent, if we're being honest, you know. So I walked down. There's a clubhouse in Birmingham called Jaffe, and I walked down there, and once again, this fellowship saved me. You know, somebody took a shot, let me sleep on their couch. I was not the most, I probably wouldn't have let me sleep on my couch, you know, just put it like that. I got a job that I hated, and started that Monday. So that Wednesday, I get a call from the Jefferson County Department of Public Health. ruh-roh, Reggie, this ain't good. You know, and I'm a slick-talking guy, and usually get you to tell me what I need to know on the phone. Ain't no sense. I ain't got no car, blah, blah, blah. She won't tell me. Friday, I get paid $650, $700. This is where the rubber meets the road. Because all this shit was theoretical. Right. When I read the book, there's a line in Bill's story that where Ebby's talking to him, and Ebby promises him that this way of life is the answer to all his problems. My book changed words because for the first roughly 6 months, it said drinking problem. I kid you not. And then Harry Potter came out, changed words. So I go in there and, you know, I'm nervous. I'm not dumb. It's hepatitis or HIV. I'm not slow, you know. And I go in there and the lady says, Mr. Isaacs, blah, blah. I said, hey, come on with it, lady. I got to go to work. She said, you got HIV. I thought my life was over with. I really do. See, you could have told me that my dog's, veterinarian's, cousin's, little girl's best friend had a head cold. I'm going to get loaded. You know, whatever excuse I can, like, eke out of the situation, I'm going to get high. And I said, up to that point in my life, the most sincere prayer I had ever said, God, please help me because I don't know what the fuck to do. And he showed up. And it didn't look like he showed up. You know, the thing about spiritual experiences, it doesn't feel like one at the time. It usually feels real uncomfortable. Real uncomfortable. Like, what in the fuck is this, bro? And my manager, who lived on the other side of town, just so happened to show up. He gives me a ride to work, right? A guy that I knew that I now work for was very vocal about his HIV. He owned a sober living, right? So it's like work, meeting, rinse, repeat till I get in the sober living. I get a new sponsor. I go back through the steps. I get completely honest and transparent because now I know my life is on the line. Like before, there was a little reservation, but then God, like the power of God showed up in my life in a way which was indescribable. Damn Tom Brady. You know, like somehow I was able to stay sober through that experience. And I bought in. That was the turning point. And that was roughly June of 2021. So the first 4 months were rocky. You know, so if you're new, it's okay. You know, it ain't supposed to be pretty. And so I started making amends, and I hadn't seen my kids in 10 months, you know. And I want to share a couple of current experiences, but I got to build up to one. I made amends to my kid's mother, right? That was hard. And then I made amends to my sister, who I played the victim game with, right? She introduced me to this way of life, but I did a lot of bad shit to her, if I'm being honest. And I made amends to her on a Saturday in October. I want to say the 15th, and no, it's the 14th, 2021. And I had a date with a girl that night. Now, let me give you a snapshot of what a date with Dylan looks like. We're going to ride in your car. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pay for dinner, and then we're going to go sit at a park because I'm in a sober living, no car, no place to go. You know, she canceled. I can't, still don't understand why. you know, so now I'm stuck at this sober living. I mean, I had a lot going for me. I'm sober, you know. 6 months, big deal, you know. And, oh, God. My kid's mom calls me and she says, hey, do you want to go with me and the kids to this haunted house thing? I said, of course. And I do the thing we all do, you know, when you're nervous and you play out every situation and it doesn't go the way I think it should. My kids open the door. Listen, I spent many years laying on a mattress about that thick on a slab of steel, picturing what my life would look like, what I wanted it to look like. And when them kids opened that door, like, hey, you're not expecting, like, where the fuck's my child support? Where you been? You know? And they greeted me with open arms. My children have probably taught me more about love and compassion than any human being. And at a time when they had no reason to, you know? Beginning of November, I went to jail sober, and that sucked, you know. Set the record for thy will be done. I was on probation. Got out, go speak at a treatment center. Right, fast forward, I get to show up for my daughter's birthday. And, like, actually, you know, I've been promised her an iPhone for years, and I actually get to, like, show up and do that, you know. And all that's well and good. February the 7th, 2022, I signed the lease for my first ever apartment, which I'm still convinced is the first legal document that was not tied to some court system with my name on it, you know? It was a big deal, man. Later that month, I go get my kids, and I'm showing them the new digs. And my middle daughter's not mine, but she's mine. Her dad's passed. And her and my kid got the same mom. And I'm taking her back, and she's like, when can we come back to your house? It feels more safe, less toxic, more like home. I ain't never stayed nowhere safe nowhere in my life. Never. I burn down everything that I come into contact with, human beings, monies, institutions, it does not matter. You know, I can't even do right in a maximum level security prison. They keep me separated from everybody else. And if that doesn't demonstrate the power of God in somebody's life, because I did not do that, you know, I don't have the capacity to. I smoke everything up. I steal everything. I shoot everything up. April the 9th, my home group at the time was moving, and I was in they gave me $500 to hold on to. Wild, you know, wild. I don't understand it, you know, because as a byproduct of integrating this way of life, I become trustable. It's new ground for me. I feel like Christopher Columbus every day of my life. You know, it's uncharted waters. And I get a call. And I think we're all in agreement. Have you heard is not the best way to start a phone call. It's usually not you just at the Powerball, you know. And there's roughly 150, 200 people there, you know. My little sister tells me that my mom had a stroke. My mom was 77 years old, raised three generations of kids that were not hers, you know. If ever there was an example of love and self-sacrifice for others, it was my mother, for certain. I just hung up the phone. I said, all right, let me know what happens. And I looked around, and I told, you know, I went and found Tarek and Frank and Brock, and I get honest with all these dudes. I got to borrow my buddy's keys to go cry in his car because I'm a man. I can't cry in front of y'all, you know. I'm still up against it. Even with some time removed, I'm still up against me, you know. And through the grace of God, my mom made it through that experience. She lives real close to a hospital. You know, the hand of God's all over that, too. My little sister had just graduated nursing school and just moved in with her, found her 2 minutes afterwards. They call it a coincidence. I know what it is. The next week, I got to go to Six Flags. I took my daughter and my best friend and his daughter, and that was cool. The fact my PO would let me leave the state was a big deal. And the next week, it was my birthday. I got these here cowboy boots y'all seem to like so much. And thank you, Brock. And I go see my mom for the first time since the stroke. And we're just chopping it up, you know. And I give her a hug. I'm getting ready to leave. And she gets up to give me a hug. She says, Dylan, I love you. I was like, I love you too, Mom. She said, whatever you're doing, please keep doing. I'm so proud of you. That was the third time in my life I'd ever heard those words come out of that woman's mouth. My mom's a hard lady. Loving, but old school. She grew up in the 40s, you know. She didn't play no shit. She used to whip me with that thing from the cable from the TV to the wall, you know. And I deserved it. I set shit on fire, the house, whatever. Not a big deal, but she thought it was. The first two times was a lie. I had constructed my outer life so that they could falsely be proud of something. I had presented them with a lie to be proud of. See, this time I knew that I hadn't lied about anything. And that's not in my vocabulary. You know? I don't know nothing but lie, cheat, steal, beg, and borrow. And then I get introduced to this way of life because I didn't really think it was going to work. You know, they talk about prayer and meditation. I say, you know, God, please don't let me go to jail. I hope I ain't got a warrant. You know? Sit quietly. That's out the window. You know, I got the TV on I got everything going while I'm on the phone. And then I start incorporating these practices. I start going up to people, hey, man, here's the money I stole from you. You know, I start actually trying to sit in meditation and sacrifice my personal time. I'll be goddamned if it don't work. Because I got a bunch of cool material stuff. I got peace. You know, and if you're new and you ain't got no peace, I get it. I didn't have none for 32 years, 31. you know? But this process gave me the availability of peace in my life. But am I willing to use the tools that are presented before me? I want to skip forward. September the 3rd, going back through steps with a group of guys. I had a job, you know. I was employable, which is wild. I got 198 felony convictions. So the fact I could get a job at a McDonald's is surprising. And I get a call, wake up, drink some coffee, get some ready to hear some bad news. I knew. It was my mom. So I did that. I got up, I pulled my books out, I prayed, meditated. 45 minutes later, I called my folks. She passed. And what's wild is I'm the first person they called. I'm the dude, hey man, don't tell Dylan we're having a birthday party this week. You understand what I'm saying? I don't know if you're that person, but if you are, you get it. I'm the first person you call? How? I don't understand. You know, my sister that I used to get high with, I went to see her for Thanksgiving one year. She said, you're not even the same. So you never gave me a bigger compliment in my life. You know, because I can't see it in myself all the time. Because I judge myself. And that's the thing that separates me from God is the judgment. Right? I can't see the divine in me or in you when I'm in that state. And that was rough, dude. Fuck, that sucked. But somehow I made it through it. You know? Somehow. By the grace of God. So then, I want to close with this. So we're coming back from this gratitude retreat in South Carolina. And a bunch of us were up there. And I've struggled with the dating sites and the ladies. Okay? It's been a problem, you know? And it's objectionable. It keeps coming up as seventh step stuff. And I can't stop, you know? So I'm driving back from South Carolina to Birmingham, Alabama. It's a long drive, Bubba. And I'm just, you know, my thumb hurts. I'm swiping so much. And I matched with this lady, you know, and we got one common friend. So what y'all don't know is that once I found out I was adopted, I didn't find my real mother until 2017 while I was in prison, right? Never met her in person, okay? Only talked with her on the phone, guilt tripped her into sending me money so I could do fentanyl and Xanaxes and all this shit in the penitentiary. And this lady has a mutual friend that's my biological sister. We get to talking, and she's like, yeah, Carol's like my adopted mom. And I'm like, oh, that's wild. And I'm thinking, she's from, like, Florida somewhere, you know? I was like, where do you live? She said, Tarrant, perspective, 20 minutes from my house. I was like, fuck, now I got to do something. You know, and if you know my sponsor and you call him and ask him if you need to make an amend, if you should make an amends, he doesn't say no, you know. And I'm up against it because I'm talking to my first sponsor, right? And I'm like, yeah, man, I've kind of let all that go. But at the same time, F that lady. He's like, you might want to inventory that. So then I'm talking to my sponsee, you know, he's got 6 months sober, good guy. I'm talking to him, and he tells me the same thing. I'm like, all right, maybe I should inventory this. And I got it in my pocket. I keep it with me. It changed my life again. Because there's multiple turning points, right? If you think that it's just about the removal of the obsession to shoot dope or however you do dope, that's one piece of it. But it's so much deeper than that. It's so much deeper than that. And I write this inventory and call this guy Brandon P out of somewhere around here, and he deflates my ego. I can't pronounce Wasaleka, wherever he's from. Yeah. W, Georgia. Yeah. W, Georgia, wherever he's from. And, you know, and he said, so let me get this straight, Dylan. You want forgiveness, but you're not willing to forgive. And he goes, you just got to quit saying the Lord's Prayer and most prayers and just be quiet. Because you're not. And I was like, okay, I get it. So I set the meeting up. I'm driving my little sister's car. I've never wanted to not do something so bad in my life, people. There's a difference between want and willingness. I was willing to do it, but I didn't want to do it, you know? If you've ever been there, you understand. And so I got silence in the rain. I smoked 15 cigarettes on a 20-minute drive, you know? I look like Dennis Leary. And dated reference, sorry. And this line from the St. Francis prayer kept popping in my head. To understand and to be understood. See, for so long, I wanted to be the victim and cast all this judgment on this lady. And the biggest thing is, like, in my life that's happened to me is the first time I heard my daughter call me her father. I can't even describe it to you. It's like trying to put words to a spiritual experience. You've either experienced it or you haven't, right? I don't know how to explain it. But my selfishness, even at 2 years sober, was wanting to deny this lady that same freedom because I was all fucked up because she wanted me to call her mom and I called her Carol, you know? But I want that same thing for my daughter. I want my daughter to refer to me as her father, but I'm not willing to give it to somebody else. And I go and I have an hour-long discussion with this lady. And you know, if you've ever sponsored anybody, you see yourself in people. You know, I've never seen myself in another human being so much. The pain, the brokenness. And we got around to it. She said, Dylan, I've never been as sick as I was when I had you. And I knew that I couldn't give you a life. And something inside me broke. Because that's when I remembered why I walked out of my daughter's life. You know? Mm-hmm. And I'm happy to report, like, that's a mended relationship I didn't see coming. You know? I didn't see that coming. And, like, not only that, she's through that, right? My experience for compassion and my capacity to be compassionate and tolerant of others is drastically improved. Because, see, what I can't see in the amends process is how this is connected to something else in my life. Because it's usually not a parallel line. But you can't get there if you don't do nothing. We got a real broad, short form of the third tradition. Right, once you express a desire. You know, but like, how many of y'all had a desire? Any heroin addicts in here? All right, so did you ever have a desire to not be dope sick? Yeah, but desire and action are two different things. You know, not everybody that's on the team is in the game. You know, and the only way you get results is to get in the game. And what does that look like? Get a home group, get a sponsor, work the steps, and stay involved in service. You know, because one thing about it, if my life can be transformed, I'm damn sure, I'm positive anybody else's can. I thank y'all for y'all's time. My name is Dylan Isaacs. I'm a drug addict.